Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down. Now, join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood, right here on The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Most people say it's who you know in the business. It's the only way to become successful. It's the only way to get noticed. It's the only way to get your project moved to the next level or even to break in. I believe it's true it's who you know, but I don't believe it's a barrier to entry. I grew up in San Fernando, and I didn't know anybody in the movie business or television business. My parents didn't know anybody in the movie business or television business. My aunts, uncles, friends, nobody knew anybody in the movie business or television business. As far as I was concerned, I might as well have lived in the Midwest, living in San Fernando. But along the way, I had an ambition to try to figure it out, to try to figure out how to do this thing that I'm doing now, how to make content, movies and television, that I could show to the entire world. And I talked a lot to my parents, and they really didn't understand the dream because they didn't know anybody that was doing what I was doing and making a living at it. And it just so happened that my dad, who at the time worked at the Southern California Gas Company, was talking to a friend of his that worked at the Pacific Bell Company, and they had a thing called corporate video, where they would make videos and instructional videos and things to kind of show their staff how the telephone systems and the cables worked. And that person thought, well, maybe your son might like an internship there one summer. And of course I did. And I called, and my first job was working at Pacific Bell in corporate video for free. And I did that for a summer until I worked so hard and I kept my head down and I was so into it that they actually gave me a job during the school year. And I was, you know, a PA and working on these little corporate videos and, you know, really working my ass off. No closer to really being in the legitimate movie or television business, but still doing something that was creative and doing something that was fairly close to actually making movies or making television. And the next thing that happened was my father happened to talk to somebody else in his line of business that knew a guy that had worked at Paramount Television in finance and thought, well, maybe now that your son's done his schooling and he has his degree and he has also done this work in corporate video, maybe he'd want a job at Paramount Domestic Television in finance. And I jumped at that chance too, because that was just another step towards my goal. I was actually going to be on a lot. And so the lesson from this is don't be discouraged if you don't know somebody in the business. Just look around you and look at the people you do know, because maybe somebody will get you that much closer to your dream. And take advantage of it and take advantage of your friends that are creative and ask the questions and always be open, because you never know who's standing right next to you that could actually help get you on this journey to find your career. Well, these people certainly did not wait. They used every relationship they could along their journey to fulfill their dream. My next guests are Hugh Davidson, Larry Dorff, and Rachel Ramirez, the stars of Nobody's. Enjoy. All right, everybody. Hi. Today we're here with Hugh, Rachel, and Larry.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just jump right in because you guys are obviously are the creators and the producers and of Nobody's.
Right.
But I want to jump in because you said that you potentially offended Leslie Bibb with a tweet.
Yeah.
And offending Leslie Bibb is like one of my favorite things to do. So what happened?
I don't know. They say we have to social media is a big thing to promote the show.
Right.
So I guess that means my 84 Twitter followers are very important to
they
to
made
reach
us
that.
Sign up.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So I tweeted. So we have to it's a thing that I don't understand. It's live tweeting.
Right.
Right. So I think if you're watching something, why who would be looking at Twitter while they're watching and enjoying something?
Oh, so you're supposed to be live tweeting your show as people are watching.
Right.
Yeah. So people can't just have the experience of watching the show. They need to be on social media at the same time.
Exactly.
Because we have no attention spans anymore. That's
and
it.
It's the same reason I hate having people watch the show. Like I'll have my parents,
right.
You know, it's like, oh, watch the show. And then they will start talking over a line.
That's
and it's
the
like
worst.
Stop talking. You missed it.
I can't even show. I've tried to show people. I have Tag coming out in June, this movie Tag that we did. And I've tried to show people the trailer. And you always have to try to show it on your phone or the computer now. There's no other way to do it. And literally people go, oh, yeah, how did that? And you go, no, stop. I don't want to talk. We'll talk after.
Yeah.
They can't even watch a trailer anymore without talking through it.
So we have to live tweet. So I tweeted and I thought it was important to tweet at celebrities because then they'll it'll go viral and that'll be great.
Right.
So in the show, Hugh plays Leslie Bibb's boyfriend.
Right.
So I said something to the effect of Hugh Davidson is at Hugh Davidson.
Period at.
Yeah.
Because we learned you have to do.
What is the period at?
I don't know.
Makes no sense. And he's Hugh Davidson. He's not even Hugh Davidson. So is the TV version of at Sam Rockwell, because in real life at Leslie Bibb is it was complicated.
At Sam.
Right.
And now what was your what was your worry?
No worry.
No, you just said you're worried.
No, because then I wrote that
is the stupidest
that is the stupidest tweet I've ever read, because it was.
And then Leslie Bibb
liked
yours
mine.
And then said at Rachel Ramirez, what is wrong with at Larry Dorf?
Yeah. Now, so what did you
do? We have any context for this?
Well, I do want to know, is there something that you doubt about your own tweet?
No.
Or can you not figure it out why it would be wrong or bad, right?
Right, I don't know.
So you just have normal neurosis.
Man, I was hoping it was going to be so
now,
much
there is something funny about this.
Because Leslie Bibb, I love her. I've done two movies with her, and she's amazing. But there is something funny to always make fun of her and offend her, because she takes it so badly all the time, and she's hilarious about it. So it is one of my favorite things.
It is good, because his tweet, though, I noticed you tagged not Sam Rockwell, the movie actor. You tagged some dipshit that lives in Arizona.
Oh,
it's a kid.
That's what happened.
So you didn't even get the right guy.
Oh, so what's wrong with you is that you suck at tweeting. Is really
Oh, that's why she was saying, what's the matter with Larry?
Well, we figured out. You know what, guys? This is a healing process. I'm glad we got to the bottom of it.
Oh, all right. Well, good for that kid.
So beyond that, and I love this because I'm just as bad. By the way, I literally I fear every time I do anything on social media. Instagram and Facebook is always like just – it's private. So I'm always like, man, I think a lot of times – mostly it's just about like shoes, because I have a lot of sneakers on set. I try to wear different sneakers on set, and like my kids. Like that's pretty much what I do. And now this thing – this podcast thing is on Twitter, and that's just about business. So it's a little bit easier for me because it's just business. So I can be like, this is what's happening in the business or whatever in the business of producing. But the reason why I was so excited to get you guys on here is because you epitomize everything I wanted to do with this, which is you guys just bootstrapped this thing. I mean, I want to hear about how it started, where you come from, and how you guys did it, because everything you guys are doing is exactly what I hope people that are listening to this will do, because it's just a great story and a huge success for you guys. So can you walk me through kind of how you became friends and how it all came together? Did you meet in the Groundlings?
We did.
Okay.
It does seem kind of like we were such hard workers, and there's an element of laziness
that
runs through all this.
By the way, if you can get this success and be lazy, even better.
To make sure we don't represent ourselves.
No.
You know.
By the way, the people who can only exist in 140 characters are going to be like, that's great. If I don't have to really do any hard work and still be successful,
it's
amazing.
Our story, I think, is really good, but the key is that we had very famous friends.
That's also a skill.
Yes.
That's true.
Because if you're an asshole,
that's true.
Famous people aren't really going to hang out with you.
Right.
Yeah.
So you guys obviously have some.
We'll drive
skills.
Them away soon enough.
Well, clearly, if you're the guy. By the way, I know the guy in Arizona whose name's Sam Rockwell. Is like,
I was wondering why at Sam Rockwell couldn't just be at Sam Rockwell. The guy I tweeted at is like at Sam Rockwell 717.
Oh. Yeah. Did it have a little?
Makes sense.
Isn't there like a little check verified?
I don't know.
You're doing it so fast.
No, you could have slowed down.
I can't slow down.
Jesus.
Anyway,
Christ.
Our story.
So, how did you get famous friends from the Groundlings?
We were all the same era.
You had to get into the Groundlings. That takes skill and negotiation.
And a lot of... it's very ultra competitive.
So at one point you were in the gutter, I'm sure.
Yeah. We were ultra competitive, got in that. And then I think we had writing careers. Probably none of us planned on being just writers.
Because
that's the one thing where you really are a hybrid performer-writer.
Right.
Groundlings. And then it's like you seem to be being... set up to be on one show, Saturday Night Live. They're really just – there's not like – because by then you're writing sketches. You're not really writing scenes. You're not writing a half hour. Right. So all you do is that.
Where did you come from? That you always liked comedy. How did you get into writing? Like,
I always loved comedy. Growing up, I would record Letterman every night, and then I got a second VCR, and then I made my own best of like Letterman, and I loved Saturday Night Live, and Groundlings. I saw one show at Groundlings, and I just thought, oh, those are my people. Right. That's where I want to be. And Larry always says Groundlings was like our college, but Larry stole that from Maya Rudolph. She said it first.
Oh, did she say that?
Yes, she did.
who was in your class in the Groundlings?
We were in there
class
with,
again.
Yeah,
how
it's kind of similar.
Yeah, we were in there with Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig,
Maya Rudolph, Emily Spivey,
Cheryl Hines,
Nat Faxon, Jim Rash,
Mikey Day, Will Forte.
Mm-hmm. That's a monster crew.
Yeah.
I mean, they all have huge success in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
But it is true that some people,
Wendy McClendon,
get you done.
Sorry,
get plucked from Groundlings.
Can you live tweet this on?
Yeah, try. Some get the wrong one.
But some people get sort of plucked early on and end up with their acting careers taking off from Groundlings, and some people end up with a job and then their writing careers take off.
Right.
And I think there's really no rhyme or reason to it. And for us, we just ended up, because of Hugh, writing in animation. And so then we became the...
Why is that?
My first job was a writing job was on Robot Chicken, which is an Adult Swim stop motion show.
And even that came out of you did a show at the Groundlings.
Yeah, no, the job came from Groundlings because Seth was in the audience and liked the way my mind worked.
Right. So you're writing for yourself on the Groundlings, right? And you're just pulling, like in Saturday Night Live, you're writing skits, pulling people in. You're pulling Maya in if she's out, or pulling Nat in.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I worked with Nat, too. I worked with Nat Faxon. And it's interesting. He and Jim, I mean, they were always writers. But post-acting, like they, in a similar way to like Rebel Wilson, she wrote because she wasn't getting the things she knew she could do.
Right.
And I feel like Nat and Jim felt they wrote things that they wanted to see, not just that they wanted to be in.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So the stuff they were writing was like, well, this is the kind of movies we want to go see.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you were all in the Groundlings doing this sketch stuff, were you guys finding your voices or were you just going, this is what's going to kill on this particular night?
I feel like we did it was our own voice. I mean, there were, without naming names, there were people who were favorites of the audience.
Melissa McCarthy.
But those people were not favorites of the other Groundlings, I feel like. Like, whenever Hugh would get up at a rehearsal and put up a sketch, you know, Hugh and Steve Little's another one, I would get excited.
Right.
I don't know that I did a show with Rachel. That's why I'm not. We overlapped, but
Rachel's
we didn't really
going,
do a
right.
show together.
We really didn't. We didn't really know each other until we started writing the movie.
The three of us didn't write. Yeah, we didn't write together at Groundlings.
So how did when you three started to feel like you had a similar sensibility, how did that come about?
That was just kind of magical.
Yeah.
I think I certainly tried to be writing partners with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think similar to Nat and Jim, when they realized they clicked, there was just something really nice about Hugh, Larry, and I. I think because we don't have the same strengths or weaknesses, and so we sort of create one good writer,
mm-hmm.
the three of us together. And I also think a three-person writing team is kind of rare, but I think it's kind of...
It's the key.
Because...
Really?
It's the best.
You always have that... If two people are disagreeing about one thing, you have that third person.
Right.
And I don't know. I think more people should try working with three people. Mm-hmm. Less ego involved.
But the way that it all started was, so Hugh got he was writing for Robot Chicken, and then out of that we got an opportunity. They wanted to reboot the Looney Tunes show.
Oh wow!
So we got hired. Hugh got hired to kind of run that show, and it was originally going to be like a sketch, kind of like a Muppets kind of thing, mm-hmm. with the Looney Tunes characters. So Hugh put together this dream team of Rachel and me, and we all thought, this is going to be the easiest job in the world. You know, we're going to get paid. It'll be our first real – although Rachel had written before, but we're going to be able to write for a show, and we'll just use our old Groundling sketches.
Right.
And how easy.
Perfect.
Right.
This is where the laziness probably will become a recurring theme.
I love it.
Like,
jazz
where you think, like, I won't have to do the job.
Before we go to what Rachel was writing before – and you talking about being a three-person writing team, the reason that I'm probably the reason why I'm not a writer is probably I suck at it, but the reason in my mind I am a producer is I need to be around people. I can't be by myself
in
a room. Mm-hmm. Like these people can just go off and do it. Like I've had writers on and they can just go off and they have a place and they just sit and do it. I'd be insane.
At Groundlings, I had my most success writing by myself, and I felt like I figured out my voice or whatever writing, but it was very unfun.
Yeah.
It was unfun to come off stage and not like, so what if my sketch... I just didn't care after a while.
Well, so much of this business is rejection, and it's better to commiserate when you've been rejected.
For sure.
So
there's every movie that I've had that has not worked, those people that I made those movies with, for the most part, are probably my closest friends.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because it's just you guys...
Kind of bonded by it.
You went to war, and it didn't work out, and you're like, damn it. And then also, those are... You know, I've done multiple movies with most people. Those are the people that you go, we got to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
We can't let this be the last one. We got to try to do it again. And so I completely... You know, can understand why you three are feeling that way. What were you writing before?
My first writing job was on Cedric the Entertainer Presents, which is a variety show. And that was amazing. I mean, that was the writer's room was Louis C.K. and Jerry Minor and J.B. Smoove. I mean, it was an amazing show.
You were the only woman.
I was the only woman. And I actually did get to use most of my Groundling sketches. It was actually, it was kind of easy.
That's great.
I was writing on weird Nick and Jessica Variety Hour, Jessica Simpson and Nick Lachey. And then I wrote on Frank TV. So there were still a lot of sketch shows back then.
Yeah.
That's true.
But we did learn, the three of us learned how to write sitcom comedy, because the Looney Tunes show did become, we turned it into basically just a sitcom starring the Looney Tunes, and no one liked it, but we learned how to write.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, we learned.
It was a show without an audience,
it was low stakes, and we could kind of do what we wanted to do, and we got to write 50 episodes of a half-hour sitcom, and we learned
with ABC D stories,
kind of our rhythm.
And plus, Looney Tunes have to say what you want them to say.
Yes,
it's not like Looney Tunes are coming.
Yes,
like, Elmer
that's
Fudd's
very
coming.
True.
I'm not saying this.
Yeah,
but the world
it's
of
kind of
animation
a great. It's not a perfect writing gig.
Is you know, and then we of course used our working in animation was sort of the springboard for this show for Nobodies, because we didn't get much respect from our peers because it was, you write on a cartoon.
Right.
Even though we loved it.
And even if that was imagined, because I doubt we were truly scorned by Nat and Jim or anybody or ever.
What? I'm sure Faxon was I'm so animated.
There is just an element of it where you just feel like a less than person when you're talking about this show that's on Cartoon Network that even kids don't want to watch. And Will's doing Last Man on Earth and you're just like...
Isn't it amazing when you set out to make something for everybody and nobody wants to see it?
That's fascinating.
It's a pretty good time.
Yeah.
I've been there.
And you persuaded some company to pay a lot of money.
And you get so far down the line before you realize, you know, this one is actually is a movie for nobody or a show for nobody.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell me about the formation of this. Such a great idea. And I'm sure you've told the story 1,000 times, but I just want to say it because it's important, I think, for anybody who's out there who's lazy, who's not good at Twitter, and to find that they can succeed. How did the show come about?
Well, we were watching the Oscars in 2013. Is that when it was?
Maybe.
And it was the year Bridesmaids,
got nominated.
Mm-hmm. So we're
Did they win? No, they didn't.
No, but that was also the year of
Nat and Jim.
Nat and Jim's movie won Best Screenplay.
Yeah,
right. The Descendants. So we're at home watching. We don't all live together. They live together. They're married in real life. And
you seem like a real old person when you're on these things. The way you structure sentences.
It's so great.
It's like
it's
a
so great
75-year-old.
It is, right? They live together. I don't live together. You need the accent, the cats.
You need
the Catskills accent.
You really
have it down. You have your own wife, I'm sure.
You don't have any matzah, do you? I'm hungry, and it is Passover. So we were watching the Oscars, and Melissa's there, and Annie Mumolo and Kristen Wiig, who wrote Bridesmaids, they're there, and Jim and Nat. Octavia Spencer. Right. And these are all
she
people
was kind
that
of
we
in
know.
Our right. little world for a yeah. while there, yeah.
Were you three watching it together? No, you weren't.
No, we
you
weren't.
Said, okay.
Yeah. No, but we got to work the next day. And we were equally depressed.
Like, wait, you go to the, back to the Looney Tunes?
We went back to the Looney Tunes the next day.
You know, yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, this we were all the same.
Right.
You know, and now we're not the same. We're not at all the same.
Yeah. And they all had those outfits on, right. tuxedos.
And then people were asking them questions about their work.
Yeah.
And it just, it was shocking. But we didn't really then think about that for a while. But that experience was formative.
Right.
Because then the next time we had a desire to try and escape the gravity of kids' TV, we didn't really know what we wanted to do, nor how to do it. But we had an idea, and it was the idea that's in the first season of Nobodies was a real idea that we had called Mr. First Lady. This also has the laziness in it. And we thought we should write a script, a screenplay, having never written a screenplay. And by the way, we still have not. We thought we should write a, get a movie going with the first male first lady in the White House and make it be like a Will Ferrell or a
Danny McBride
type guy. Because at the time, Sarah Palin, her husband, was he was shooting animals from helicopters and stuff. It just seemed like that's a funny character to be the first lady.
Yeah. No way to depress you?
Yeah.
You I developed that script at Disney in like 1996.
Well, that's why some of our meetings would say.
Isn't that amazing?
They said, oh, we've heard this
Isn't it
before.
Amazing? Like you literally can go, like, and I love the idea. Like I loved when I developed, I can't remember what it was called, Mr. President. Oh, my idea was it was Clinton. And he was president for
then,
two terms. Then his wife won. And he couldn't and he couldn't let it go. And so my idea was he's like, you know what? I'm just gonna. My wife will be in there, and I'm gonna get in there, and I'm gonna do my thing. And then she was so powerful, they put him out to pasture, and so it was Mr. Mom. He literally was padding around the White House, hitting golf balls off the first into Pennsylvania Avenue because he's bored. And then he ultimately has to learn that you know he's got to have this respect for his. That was my.
These would all be great movies,
right?
All of them.
Why hasn't this movie been made?
Know.
We can do this.
Let's do it.
But you know, the, going back about you guys watching the Academy Awards, which is why I try not to watch them because I just get depressed every time I watch them because it's literally everybody I know, and it just makes you feel like shit. It can never make you feel good unless you're, I guess, there, and then you probably feel like shit because you're there and you don't win.
And then if you don't
so like one guy feels good,
right.
But but what's interesting is that everybody you mentioned, all your friends, did the same thing which you guys are about to do, which is just did their own thing,
right.
So Nat and Jim wrote The Descendants, and it got made. The way that movie got made is so incredible. And then you know Melissa was you know cutting her teeth at the Groundlings and creating all these characters that she then drew.
Kristen and Annie wrote.
So everybody just said, "Fuck it, I'm going to do it on my own." Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that every time I say "fuck it," watch, he has to move. And it's my favorite thing because I'll say it.
Oh, you can't say it.
You can say whatever.
Oh, okay.
Well, you can say whatever the fuck you want. Now watch, he's got to do it, and he's going to bleep it. See? So it's my favorite thing to watch.
Gee.
It's like my one little joy I get out of the corner of my eyes. And go, oh. But they all did just say, I'm going to do it myself. I can't rely on anybody doing it for me. I've got to write my way out of this. And just as an aside, when Seth and Evan had the movie, The Interview, that was in the Sony hack, I had a call. Their agent is Blair Cohan. And I love those guys. I think they're so incredibly talented, obviously. And I was at Sony at the time. I had a deal there. And I was like, man, this sucks that this whole Sony hack is just taking this movie out. And she said, it's no problem. They're writing their way out of it. And they literally, like, the next day we're in the lab just writing, you know, writing their next movie. Like, whatever. That happened. Moving on. So I think that it's such an incredible power you guys have to write your way out of whatever situation you felt you were in.
Yeah, that's the one thing where the three of us always say, at whatever moments there have been in the past, like Rachel, she got cast in something, the Not Another Teen Movie. What was it called?
Not Another Teen Movie.
Neil Moritz.
And then she wouldn't do it.
Well,
she would.
No, I was supposed to be, I guess in that movie, there are Siamese twins, right? And because I'm trying to remember who ended up getting my part. And then I just started thinking, I went and got a cast made of my face, and I almost had a panic attack. And I just started thinking of the logistics, like, well, how do you, go to the bathroom? And what do you
And then you just quit.
And I just wrote a letter to Joel Gallagher.
Wow. You wrote him a letter?
Was this before?
Dear Joel
this
Legal?
Might have been before telephone.
Was it handwritten in calligraphy?
I think I embossed it
with a wax stamp.
Yeah.
I'm afraid
horse,
I must retire.
And I don't know. I'm an anxious person, and so that's why I don't like auditioning. And so,
but at any rate, I think what's good is like those. I'm glad those acting opportunities did not happen.
Right.
For the very reason that you said, which is like,
oh yeah, Hugh tested for The Office. He was down to like three people, and it went to Rainn Wilson.
That's true.
Is that still on your resume, by the way? That was on your resume.
God, for a long
time. I think they had me put
tested,
it on there.
Tested for the office.
Almost got it.
Uh-huh. They almost got
it. That's awesome. I almost produced 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there was 40 of us auditioning, and I didn't get it. So I figure I'm a second. Tied, you know, like it's like the golf, right?
Right.
Like 20 guys tie for
this. I was a participant. Yeah. I got a participant ribbon. But I do think like that does – because that is the one part that I do think I agree with the premise of like that we feel the sense of picking ourselves up by our bootstraps now, because there's that infantilization of your career if you're an actor only. Mm-hmm. You just are waiting for so many things to go right.
It's all waiting. Many
things have to go right.
Right.
That are, you have nothing to do with.
Right.
And at least this, like even with nobodies, we're used to thinking like, what's our next thing?
Yeah, good.
And it's like, it's a nice, and it's that's the funnest part.
Well, the thing about being an actor, which is so, among the many things that's being difficult about being an actor, but one of the most important things about being an actor that's difficult is that it's not what you're great at, it's you have to become the thing that they write. And that so the writing has to be great, mm-hmm. you have to be great,
right.
You have to be great for that,
that day.
You have to be great that day, the director has to be great,
mm-hmm. yeah.
the editor has to be great.
Yeah.
So it's like all those, if all those things aren't completely aligned, you can
right.
suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm, you know, again, being a producer, it's just taking your own initiative
yeah.
and writing stuff for yourself and going, I know what I can do. I know mm-hmm. what I'm good at. You know mm-hmm. what? So many really good actors that I work with that, you know, have had success are able to say, no, by the way, I make fun of Leslie Bibb. She's amazing because she can, and I've been in editing rooms watching her for hours and hours and hours, and she will give you 19 different things. Like, it's always slightly different. And she'll go, wait, you know what? I got one more. Try that. And she's so good. And obviously her husband is her husband or just her boyfriend?
Larry?
Did they get married?
I think
the
boyfriend.
Kid living
boyfriend.
In Phoenix?
Who's the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but
he's single.
He's obviously amazing too. But those two, being an actor is so hard. And when you can do that and turn it, it gives you so many more choices. You increase your odds of success mm-hmm. exponentially because the chance that the director or the editor will screw it up goes down because you've given them so many different options.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to jamming them into one and then it becomes the thing and it can go completely sideways.
I do remember seeing watching a scene between Hugh and Leslie Bibb in season one, and it was a beautiful scene. It was on this overpass of a freeway, and it was night, and at the end of the scene Hugh grabs Leslie and they kiss, and I'm watching it and I'm just in it, and I'm just like, wow, I'm believing every second of it. And then you know, the kiss is over and they pull back from each other, and then Leslie just turns ever so subtly and just finds the light. And I'm like, oh, this is all bullshit.
Damn it.
She doesn't love him at all.
And she stopped and went,
she's a monster. She's a psychopath.
Yeah.
I mean, she got my murder in.
Yeah.
It's the opposite.
Hey, before we keep going with nobodies, I want to take a second to talk about Keeps. Maybe you've noticed that you have a little less hair than you used to have, but you're not sure there's a real solution. The thing is, there are two clinically proven medications that let you keep your hair. And now they're inexpensive and easy to get. You don't need to lose your hair if you don't want to, and that's why I have to tell you about Keeps. For 5 minutes now and just a dollar a day, you'll never have to worry about hair loss again. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/producers. That's keeps.com/producers. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/producers. Look, getting started with Keeps is so easy. Sign up. It takes less than 5 minutes. Just answer a few questions and snap some photos. A licensed doctor remotely reviews your information and recommends the right treatment for you, all without having to leave your couch. Keeps offers generic versions of the only two FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Some of you probably have tried them before, but you've never gotten them this easy for this price. Keeps is only $10 to $35 a month, plus now you can get your first month free. That's one hell of a deal for getting to keep your hair. There's no reason to put this off any longer. Stop hair loss today the easy way with Keeps. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/producers. That's KEEPS.com/producers. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/producers. Keeps, Hair today, hair tomorrow. Hey, if you like the show, then step into Heather Dubrow's world. Every Friday on Podcast One, Heather's talking to some great guests like Queer Eye's Karamo Brown, YouTube's Mamrie Hart, and Grace Helbig, and so many more. You don't want to miss a second of it. Check out Heather Dubrow's world at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review.
This is The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Okay, so then you create it, but then how does it become a thing? You guys decide.
Well, we had our Mr. First Lady idea.
Yeah.
And then we went to.
Well, first thing.
It's a feature pitch.
It's a feature pitch.
And so.
We went on like three meetings.
And of course, and they all said they've heard it.
Yes.
About, yeah, that's
and we didn't have anyone.
Or they said, have you ever written a movie before?
They asked a number of questions we should have anticipated, and we had no answer for any of these.
No right answer.
Right.
Well, that's the thing that's so amazing is, you know, when you go from being a writer on the outside to stepping through the gates of a movie studio, you've literally stepped through time 5 years, right? Because the stuff that they're releasing has been in development for 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And also just the breadth of volume of stuff they've seen is insane.
Yeah.
And you know, I was a studio guy for 20-something years, and it was always the saddest thing for me because we'd get young executives who would come in so excited and be like, I got it, you know, first man. And I'd be like, hold on. I think I have it here under my desk. Like, and they're just, the crushing, like, what?
Yeah.
And also we won't talk about this, but this is why so many people sue.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, every movie that comes out, you're like, son of a bitch. That was there's no way they came up with that idea.
Yeah.
There's no way. You know, if First Man would have been released the year after, you'd be like, that sucker took my idea. And it's just, it's hard to have a really new idea. There's only a fresh take on it.
Yeah, right. I agree.
So you go out, are you going to pitch now to studio execs?
Yeah.
Oh,
we did like three.
Yeah.
They were terrible.
One we thought was going great.
Oh.
We're in there and
happened.
Yeah. And then we found out.
What happened?
It was great. He loved us. He was laughing. He loved everything. And then we realized he was the assistant.
Oh, no.
And the man hadn't arrived.
Yeah. And we were so tired.
We used all our jokes.
Sweaty at that point.
All our pre-planned jokes.
Yeah, you're like,
we have to do them again.
Again.
And then when the real guy came in, we did our pitch and we thought it went okay.
That was
and
a new line.
That night. Yeah.
I think it's good
enough. And then that night, or two nights later, we went to the premiere of Tammy because Ben and Melissa invited us.
Right.
And we saw that guy.
Right.
And,
Larry and I were like, we should go, you know, schmooze with him. And like, and so I waved. He totally saw me. And he absolutely saw me, and he walked right past me.
Oh, no.
It was so gross.
It's hard. I don't know if it's gross.
It's gross.
Okay. It's gross. But it's also, you have to understand, too, the reason why I didn't wave. No, it wasn't. This is totally awkward. The reason I didn't stop. No, it's also hard. From the other side, too, keep in mind, Tammy's probably his movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's freaking out because 500 of his closest friends' frenemies are going to be watching this movie and say how much it sucks because this is what they do, and you're trying to find probably Melissa and Ben and be like, and you're in this thing, and somebody who he met that day waves, and he's like, "Do I know that?" There's a lot going on too.
I tried to say this to him that night, but it didn't. It just fell on deaf ears.
It sucks too because also everybody's we're all in our own movie, right? So everybody's in their own point of view, right? People think like, "Oh, you have a big premiere; it's going to be great." That's hard. It's hard to be sitting there in front of everybody exposing yourself and putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm
that
sure it
would require empathy on Larry's and my part. We don't have that.
Well, no, you guys are just – you're concentrating on yourself.
Right,
that's good. So the three pitches don't go –
they don't go well. But then we say, well, maybe that we could turn this into a TV show. And
because that in and
wait, of it, we, why, well, we did not.
Well, but it's because whenever something embarrassing happens to us, we do use that for our next.
Oh, I thought you meant we were going to try and turn Mr.
Oh, no,
Lady.
No.
So
no.
We thought the idea of us,
but still,
another
year went by. I mean, that's the other thing. I feel like the one piece of advice is just, and it's not. It's just, it all takes so f***ing long.
Look,
it does. It just takes so long.
It does. It's
and
insane.
It's like,
so today, I sent an email to that executive, who I'm sure it was, that I've been trying to get this movie that I have greenlit for a year. a year ago, because I have these now, one thing about, what's good about social media is these memoir apps come up, and I was in Mexico with my family trying to get this movie greenlit, and he goes, we got tag greenlit, and then he goes, this other movie, it's right, it's next. It was a year. It's been a year of not doing anything.
Yeah.
Not like, we got to redevelop, oh, we lost a director. Oh, the director's been on the movie for 2 years. It literally has been a year of just waiting. Trying to get this movie greenlit. Like waiting for the right time, waiting for the right moment.
Now, I will say, for just from our vantage point, knowing nothing about it, it looks like that movie business is way, way worse.
Well, that's why I'm doing
this. Than
the
TV thing.
It is.
It seems like it's got so many things that also have to kind of.
Of course. Yeah. And that's why being a producer is hard, but why it's also worthwhile. Yeah. Is you can't. Yes, if this was the only thing I was doing, I'd be working at Ralph's.
Right.
It can't be. You cannot.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It can't. In the movie business, it cannot just be one thing.
Right.
Like if you come in as a young producer and you go, I've got a great script.
Right.
And this is my thing. It's my ticket. And I'm going to punch this ticket. And you're going to read it. And it's called First Man or Mr. First Lady.
Mr. First Lady.
Better title, by the way. And I got it. And you literally sell everything and move here and walk into a studio with the script, and they go, "We've seen this 100 times. You're dead.
Yeah.
You turn around, you drive back. You have to be agile enough to do both, to do both television. Even though I haven't had any success in television yet, and you got to be agile enough that you have a big enough inventory that you can pivot and go, okay, well, this movie is going to get made at some point, but I have this, because they're all on different tracks, inching their way along.
Yeah.
But it just takes – it's like Sisyphus. You just got to keep at it. So anyway, so you then decide this embarrassment would make a good TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this time it was easier. We went to our famous friends, Melissa McCarthy and Ben.
Perfect.
For the second time.
Right. Oh, because we did go to them for the Mr. First Lady.
But that was when we also realized how we still don't realize how the movie business works. But at that time.
Me either, by the way.
It was like, well, Melissa, she clearly was already on the way out.
Yeah.
And we were like, she could be the president? Yeah, come on.
Perfect. Ben could be the first lady, right?
Then just finding out what her schedule was, because at the point she was still on Mike and Molly, but like her summers were spoken for 4 years out.
Yeah.
So she wasn't going to be able to do our movie, at least in any time frame that made any sense to us. So
she could have done it.
Let's be clear. She did a couple movies since Tammy. It could have been one of them. Could have been yours.
Yeah, it's true.
So you brought her on to produce with you guys?
Yes.
Had she done any producing at that point?
Yeah, she produced. Ben and I had a pilot at CBS.
Okay.
That was based on my life.
You're so excited right now.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, it was based on my life, and it was from a Groundling sketch.
Okay.
There was another.
That sketch made no sense that was the basis for your.
Okay,
just really quickly.
Yeah.
What is the idea of the pilot?
The pilot, okay. So it comes from.
Well, let me back up because you didn't bite on that one. What part of your life is this based on?
Well, let me back up.
Let me tell you.
He doesn't want you to back up.
Because
You can go to
Two of our friends had a pilot, and it was the first people I knew that had a pilot. And I thought, this is huge.
Right.
This is great. And it was based on – the opening scene was a sketch. So I'm like, that's the secret.
Right.
You need
sketch. You're big on that.
A sketch.
He always wants the quick.
I want the math.
The quick fix.
Totally.
So it's like, all right.
Secret.
So
what's
I need
the quickest way to success?
Okay. Yeah. So I need a sketch. That'll be my launching off point.
Right.
Okay. So I had a sketch that was that I did at Groundlings, hugely successful. I mean.
This is not true.
So it was I did it during the, 2008, during whenever it was the recession.
Right.
You don't even remember your own stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
and
this
I was a guy.
Chewing up minutes.
I was
okay.
a guy.
That's right. I'm loving
who
it.
It took place in 2004. All right, so I'm someone that's going to give you financial advice, and it's all about in 2004. You know, take out multiple mortgages, buy houses.
Right.
This is the key to getting successful. Right.
So the last, ideally, the audience knew that this was bad advice.
It's bad advice.
Your point,
right? So that's the first scene, and then me in the audience in 2004, taking notes, and it all goes to shit, and then I have to move back in with my parents.
Okay,
right?
And did you move back in with your parents in real
life? No, that part's fixed.
But what part of the real
well,
life is this?
It's
none.
Me. It's my family. It's the characters. So
okay.
It's my dad, my mom, right. My sister. So it's the character.
But can I ask one question? Was the idea that you would star in it ever?
The idea was, okay. And the hope was
that in your head or was that expressed?
In my head. Right. In my head. But I would just wanted a pilot. You know,
you do realize
the desperation.
That, comes you do realize that most comedians when they do pilots, it's just basically their family life.
I had no idea. So Bridesmaids just comes out.
That's then, another great thing about Larry.
It's the best.
He so wants to be successful in this business, and he has no interest in anyone else's product. He doesn't like any shows. He doesn't watch any of them. He doesn't know anything.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a desire.
You're either going to get the most original or the least original.
Yeah. So far, a lot of the least.
Yeah.
So Ben, you know, because he was in Bridesmaids. And by the way, Ben was writing with us on the Looney Tunes show.
Oh.
And I came into work one day and I said, I have an audition to be in this movie Bridesmaids as an air marshal.
Oh, God, no.
And Ben comes in and he's like, oh, God, it was offered to me. And then he got it. So now he's on a rise,
right.
You know. And so the CBS people say, okay, well, Melissa's going to produce it. Ben, you'll play Larry, which we can't call Larry anymore because it's not Larry anymore. It's
the Ben Show.
Yeah. So, but it was a very good experience.
What was the,
why was
what
it
was
good experience?
What the hell
what was the point?
What the hell was the point?
I was leading somewhere.
We keep going back in time now, though.
No, it's just, you just wanted to be talking.
Oh, you asked if Melissa had ever produced it.
Oh, okay.
So well, that was
the answer to
that
question.
Yeah, that was
that's
the answer.
Perfect.
So we had worked together producing that pilot. So this was now her second, you know,
right.
For
TV.
But I will say, honestly, there is a point in there besides the fact that, honestly, I'm not being, I'm serious.
No, I'm dying to hear
the point.
It is.
No, the point is, and you sort of hit on it before, it's honestly, relationships are a currency for sure. And, mm-hmm. and the fact that you guys made it to the Groundlings so hard in the process to get into that is so rigorous. And the bar is already set so high that using your friends, you three being a perfect example of just partnering with them, finding people that have like sensibility. I'm sure Ben and you, obviously, if he's going to play you in your real life, has the same sensibilities. So for people out there that are in theater or in the workplace in somewhere,
right.
It's just gravitating, like you said, towards people that have your similar sensibility because it's going to take being able to talk to people and go, this sucks, right? Okay, good. We both agree it sucks. Let's go try to figure it out and make it happen. And those things, you never know where those things are going to lead.
Right.
Because, like I said, everybody, you have to have an inventory of development from movies.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say you have to have an inventory of friends, but you kind of do. You never know which friend is going to pop. Obviously, insanely, all your friends kind of popped at the same time. But, you know, Ben getting that leg up gives you a leg up when Melissa now can produce your pilot. Those things mm-hmm. are really important to mm-hmm. keep your friends close and work with them, and because that's the only place people can start is just with the people that are around them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys obviously were in an insanely talented.
But even then, it is funny. Like, people were skeptical. I know we've worked in animation, and early on, we would try to cast some of those Groundlings.
Right.
And then I got the sense from Warner Brothers Animation, they were like, you know, as if it was we were using nepotism. We're like, these were our buddies from college or something. It was like, wait, they've been vetted. Like, they're pretty good.
The
you
business
know?
Has vetted them.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like Kristen Wiig. I think you're going to be glad that she's Lola Bunny on your shitty show. So maybe you guys could just back off suggesting your crappy voiceover actors for 1 second and let us cast this woman.
So Melissa comes on. Ben comes on. What's the pitch process for Nobody's Like?
We went...
Where did we go? Netflix? Amazon?
No, we went one day with Ben and Melissa, or just Ben?
Just Ben.
Just Ben,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Just Ben in a car with Ben and Ben's agent. And then...
Were you all in the same car?
No, they kept us in a separate car. I think the three of us were in our own car. And
isn't
they were
that a fun... I mean,
it was great.
That's a fun day,
it's
isn't it? Because you literally are... Because whenever I go pitch movies, which I don't really do anymore because people don't buy pitches of movies so much anymore, but it was so much fun. We jump in my truck, me, mm-hmm. the writers, whoever is involved. At one point, I had a pitch with The Rock before The Rock became like mm-hmm. his second wave of insane success. And it's just such a fun day.
Yeah.
You drive around and you kind of adjust the pitch based on, oh, that ate it. We can't sell that joke anymore. And you just, and you mm-hmm. know the rhythm of what's going to kill. And you kind of can see, kind of read the rooms.
Yeah, we only did it the one day.
It's fun.
But it was very fun.
It's a fun day.
And by the third place, they bought it.
That's awesome.
TV Land bought
That's
it.
That's great.
And then that was like
– Who was the
– That was very exciting.
What regime was that? Is it the same regime
yes.
that's now? Okay.
It is.
Because it went through a bunch of transitions.
Right.
Keith Cox, Brad Gardner, Dana Tunier.
So it's the new, mm-hmm. newish regime.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then they all moved over to Paramount and
that's
brought
where the show
our
was
show.
Now.
So our show's now on a different network.
Right. I just did a deal with Paramount.
Uh-huh.
So I'm excited.
So they're going
I'll see you on the lot.
Oh, good.
It's a great crew.
Yeah. That's another funny thing is like, that you know, the stories like, oh, they'll have all these bad notes.
Right.
And their notes were always good.
That's
and
good.
And they were always reasonable.
Yeah.
They only were about trying to make sense of the whole thing.
Right.
So we never had one cross moment with the...
What was the one-line pitch of the show?
God, I don't... What did we say?
We probably should have had one.
Yeah.
Did Larry do a skit first and start it off?
You know what it was? I do think
it was
what
the thing they did
it
today
was our
here.
Dynamic of really not being good at being able to pitch it.
Oh.
I think that described what the show was going to be. Three right. people who are not good at what they're trying to pursue. Right.
Like I quickly pout and I shut down and then he tries to oversell it.
And then he and I start over talking and then we get very nervous and we talk too fast.
It's so
none
terrible.
Of it makes sense.
So great.
And
it's just super authentic.
Yeah.
And they liked it and then they said, so Keith Cox at TV Land, he said, all right, so let me
you're
get
like
this straight.
You were like an older, like Keith Cox at TV, the way you say things.
So
are you a reporter for the AP from 1950 filing a story?
So he said, all right, let me get this straight. You guys want to act in it?
Oh, God.
And that was a weird moment. And we're like, well, and I wanted to say, no, whatever you want.
Right. Thank God Ben didn't say, or I'll play Larry. Yeah.
Exactly.
So then we had this, we had this weird table read.
That was like an audition.
It was like an audition. That was very nerve-wracking to see if we could act in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we passed that audition, which was very good.
Wait, you guys had to act? Like, you auditioned?
It wasn't really an audition.
They didn't say it was an audition, but it was clear
table
that it
read.
Was because they filmed the table read. And
then that was like
no
a three-day
–
that was an excruciating long weekend that the tape was sent to New York.
Oh, boy.
For the boys in New York.
I've never been on television. Hugh's right. never been on television. Larry's in commercials. So it was risky of them to let us star in it.
I said I was very close to getting the job on The Office.
Right.
It was on my resume.
Yes.
Three away.
How much fun it was that table read?
It was terrible.
Really?
Yeah. The one we were auditioning?
Yeah. I mean,
I thought it was fun.
I generally find...
I was shaking.
I generally find in comedies, table reads go one of two ways.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And nothing is ever as funny as the table read because mm-hmm. it's the first time you're hearing the joke mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. first time you're really hearing actors do it and you're just like, whoa, that was I imagined how Jon Hamm was going to read that, but it's Jon Hamm. Yeah. And then you go, and you're kind of chasing it and you're always like, but it's as funny in the movie, but you're always
right.
like, I've heard the joke now.
Yeah.
Or it goes awful and then that never sees the light of day. So the fact that you felt it went awful and you still got a show out of it is fascinating.
Yeah.
Did it go awful, do you think? Or are you just pouting right now?
I think it was just the experience felt like it had so much pressure on it.
Oh, okay.
It was unpleasant. I don't think we did. I think we actually rose to the occasion. At least we got probably like a C+.
It must have murdered. I mean, if you got it, it must have been funny.
I guess. Yeah, I think it probably was. But it just was unpleasant.
I understand.
Yeah.
It's like the premiere.
Yes. It was an unpleasant experience.
And so that call comes in, you going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it took several days. I mean,
You TV guys. it took several days to get the green light. I'm like, I've had movies for 9 years. I'm still waiting for that
call. It is funny because Larry's personality is also like, I do get excited. When we got the good news, I was very excited.
Good.
But we had to take I had to take the dog for a walk. And I took the dog for a walk, just long enough for a dog to urine.
Right.
And I got back and he was panicked. Like, we're going to blow
oh, no.
it. It's all going to be bad. It's bad news. We can't do it. It was just like, you know, in success, there's always like
it's
the
always
next
hard.
Thing that's
do
like,
you,
this, which is, by the way, is where we are right now. Yeah. Like, are our ratings going to be good?
Yeah.
Is it going to be,
you
know.
Do you celebrate your successes?
We try to.
You have to, man.
Yeah.
Because
I
don't. And it sucks.
Yeah.
Because I when I was younger and I was in the business And if success had happened, I'd be like, eh, there's going to be a million of them. That's going to happen all. And then it doesn't.
Right.
For so long. Mm-hmm. Then you freak out. When you do have success, you're like, oh, and you're panicked and you're worried what you do. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh. So there's you have to. It's so important in our business because success is so hard and so fleeting to celebrate it.
Right. March 29th was the premiere of the season. That day, we're like, oh, this sucks. We have to live tweet our show. And it's like, it's great. We have a show. Are you complaining?
So Larry did. He brought over a bottle of Veuve.
Great.
And we all sat on the couch and we had champagne while we did it. And it's funny. I think, was it when we...
And the kids were doing their homework, like right there.
When we got the pilot, something we did take ourselves, and I think having more than one person is also a reason why we celebrated. I think if it were just ourselves, maybe we wouldn't. We took ourselves to Petrosian, I don't know how you say it, but it's like a fancy restaurant in Beverly Hills. And we
It's like that caviar.
It's caviar.
We all ate caviar because we thought that's what...
Yeah.
Like,
that's a fancy Hollywood people in their 30s would have done. Like your generation, Larry.
So we do try and celebrate because we don't know how long
it'll
last.
I broke the spoon. They give you this mother of pearl spoon.
Right.
And I broke it. And then we got recognized also that day. And then we're like, oh my God, this is we're celebrities. I mean, we can't go anywhere now.
Right.
And then the person was like, because I know you because I edited your pilot.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay. By the way,
all right.
They remembered you, Rachel.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, you got to. You have to.
Yeah.
And you guys are having great success.
Yeah. And now we have another show also. We're doing this other show on Adult Swim.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is that?
Mike Tyson Mysteries.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's very fun.
Great.
Yeah.
And how did that pitch go?
That's a long time. That's going in its fourth season.
Oh, okay.
On Adult Swim. And that's like, I think Mike Tyson just came and he wanted to do a cartoon.
That's amazing.
And someone said,
so it's right. animated.
Yeah, mm-hmm. animated.
That's great.
That's animated.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So now, there's a person out there or three people that are lazy and they have, you know, they're doing some stand up or whatever, or they're trying to figure out what their comedic voice is. Given all the technology, given everything now today, what advice would you give young or not so young, in Larry's case. Well, I don't know why I'm zinging you today. Just, they started it. I have to jump in. Anybody who's young, old, that just says, "I want to be in the business. I want to do what they do." What advice would you give them?
I mean, I tell people two things when they ask me for advice. I say, because LA is such a big place.
Yeah.
You know, I think for us, going to the Groundlings, a place like that, somewhere where you can have peers and you can have make the big city seems smaller, and you have partners because, you know, I like working with partners. We all do. And then the other thing is, like, if you're writing something, ask yourself why you're the person to tell that story. Mm-hmm. So nobody's – it's like, well, it's literally our story, and it doesn't have to be just, you know, that it happened to you.
Right.
But is it your point of view?
Authentic.
Is it authentic to you? And, you know, because it's like – you know, and I remember when I was trying to write another pilot, and it's like, well, maybe doctors, people like, you know, shows about doctors. And it's like, why would I tell a story about doctors? I don't know anything about
it. Didn't you try to write one about a ghost?
I did, yeah.
Ghosts are popular.
They're fun.
Right.
I was ghosts before everyone liked ghosts.
And you two being married, what is that like? What advice would you give to people?
Get another person in there so you don't just write with your husband.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I think I can't imagine because there's a lot of those writing partners that are married. I don't know how they do that.
Right.
Because every once in a while Larry's not there. Like, we were still writing on the Looney Tunes show when Larry betrayed us and went off with Ben to do his stupid pilot. By the way, you just told this advice about organic stuff and your pilot had nothing to do with anything.
That's why it didn't work. His advice was exactly accurate.
Right. Exactly.
So we were left, Rachel and I, this was a truly sick thing about Larry. He went off, was working at, now he's at the lot, the main lot. We're still at the ranch.
Right.
You know, the junior varsity.
Yeah, right.
He's up there in the varsity. And he would call us on Thursday and try to find out if we would put in his timesheet. So he could still get paid on the Looney Tunes show.
No, that's a diabolical.
Yeah. But Rachel and I were left to write
and also
like
to
four
go,
or five episodes.
I don't
about
have much time, guys. I'm about to do my table. I'm about to do my table read. But
I'll try to get you guys in here.
Right. And he did. He said, you know, if this show goes, I'll try and get you guys on the writing staff. And so we had to, like, pretend like we still liked Larry because, for all we knew,
he was our
meal ticket. Yeah.
But then he came back and you could just be treating like you did before.
Right. Exactly.
And then what else? What was the other?
Mike Tyson, Mysteries is on Adult Swim. Sunday nights.
Perfect.
At 11-ish. 11:30, maybe.
That's
11.
Close enough.
I think 11.
Well, you guys, thank you so much. Congratulations on everything. This has been really fun.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Very
thanks.
Fun.
Nice
thanks.
To meet you.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Producer's Guide. We're produced by Katie McEwen, Kirsten Woodward, and Steve Delamater. I want to answer all your questions about the business, so make sure to tweet me at Todd_Garner or use hashtag Producer's Guide on Twitter. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. Download new episodes every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
Have you checked out The Big Podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
wow.
I
was like,
"Thank you very much." Oh, but I hate that John
Kincaid. Oh, no. That's terrible. Listen free to The Big Podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.